John was also talking about the idea that he thinks some patients somehow feel better on ibrutinib. I know you've had some experience with acalabrutinib. Can you discern any quality of life or qualitative differences between those two BTK inhibitors?
I do think that much of what we're discussing here, the subclinical fatigue or malaise that some patients get on ibrutinib, I have not seen as much with acalabrutinib. The basis for it molecularly is very unclear, and my experience with acalabrutinib is still much more limited than my experience with ibrutinib, but that is my impression.
As long as you bring it up, and we'll get into it maybe more a little bit later, but I'm kind of curious, you know, how you visualize or how you go through with your fellows the difference in spectrum of, I guess, kinases that are affected not just by these two BTK inhibitors, but maybe others in development. Is there a big difference?
Right. So I think there is quite a substantial difference. As you know, ibrutinib is pretty nonspecific. It inhibits 19 kinases other than BTK with an IC50 less than 100 nanomolar. And that includes EGFR, which may contribute to rash and diarrhea, as well as quite a number of SARC kinases, TEC and ITK. In the development of the next generation covalent inhibitors, there's been quite a focus on TEC and ITK. TEC because of the fact that dual inhibition of BTK and TEC probably contributes to the platelet dysfunction. And so if you remove TEC inhibition, you may have less platelet dysfunction. And so that's one of the developments that was employed with acalabrutinib. Zanabrutinib does actually inhibit TEC as potently as ibrutinib, though. Neither of them inhibit EGFR or the SARC kinases, and so there's a lot more specificity there. And then the other actually very interesting kinase is ITK, because it's thought that some of the favorable immunomodulation that may occur with ibrutinib may be mediated through ITK, and that that may even, some people believe that may even contribute to the efficacy. And that was edited out of both acalabrutinib and zanabrutinib because of the concern that it would inhibit the activity of anti-CD20 antibodies, which was demonstrated in vitro, that inhibiting ITK and NK cells would inhibit ADCC. And ibrutinib does that, but acalabrutinib and zanabrutinib less so.
That's really interesting. I haven't heard about the EGFR thing, because when I've heard the rash described with ibrutinib, I mean, is it like the EGFR rash?
It's actually very variable. It's not that consistent. And so I think it's multifactorial. We get some very minor on and off rashes that are easily managed with a bit of topical steroid. And then we get very severe rashes, including erythema nodosum, erythema multiforme, even bordering on Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which we can't manage and lead to discontinuation. And so it is really all over the map.
What about, as long as we're talking about mechanisms and kinases, what about atrial fibrillation? And what do you think the actual mechanism is?
Right. I do think it is related to kinase inhibition in the heart. And I do think atrial fibrillation is the tip of the iceberg. We reported also on risk of ventricular arrhythmias, including sudden death. And we're working on assembling a series of heart block patients. I've had quite a number of patients require pacemakers after going on ibrutinib, as well as intermittently congestive heart failure. But the target kinase is really unknown.
So that's interesting. So it's thought to be a kinase, but nobody knows what it is.
No, and it may even be multiple kinases. BTK and TEC are both expressed in the heart. HER2 is also obviously expressed in the
right.
heart, and ibrutinib has activity against HER2.
HER2, wow, interesting. Okay,